The following programming is sponsored by BFG LLC. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
After the 1876 presidential election, 15 white men gathered in a room to figure out a solution to first stop a particular movement known as the Wormley Agreement the Compromise of 1877. Five Supreme Court justices, five senators, and five representatives awarded the presidency of Rutherford B. Hayes in exchange for ending Reconstruction era. The concession included a specific amount that federal government would stop forcing former Confederate states to recognize the constitutional right of black citizens. Legislators in the northern and southern states immediately created a series of racially discriminatory practices or policies that became known as Jim Crow laws. For 100 years, from the end of race-based slavery until the passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, every black person in America lived under the constitutionally enforced, government-approved system of white supremacy. Because of Jim Crow, the black codes created after emancipation were now the law of the land. Segregated schools was disenfranchised. Black voters and banned non-white people from living wherever they wanted. Jim Crow excluded black taxpayers from using facilities built and maintained with their tax dollars. Welcome to Conversation Unplugged on WWDB 860 AM in the City of Brotherly Love and Sisterly Affection with my co-host, Bishop Dr. Kevin Akin, as well as Pastor Robert Johnson. We have our guests on, my brother in Christ out of the Pittsburgh area. No cheering for Pittsburgh Steelers, though. But out of the Pittsburgh area, Reverend Dr. John Wells. Oh, he got it on camera. Oh, my God. Help my brother in Christ. Amen. It's good. How's everybody doing this afternoon? Pastor Johnson, Bishop Kevin, Pastor Welch, and we're going to get into this subject. How's everybody doing today?
Doing good. Very good.
Good. So our subject today, and thank you, Pastor Welch, subject matter expert, what we want to talk about is Representative Congressman. We want to talk about Representative Byron Donalds, Congressman out of Florida, who grew up in D.C., his controversial Jim Crow statements. He was here in Philadelphia, ironically, just for my Philadelphia passage. I didn't get my invite. You get your invite, Pastor Bishop Akin?
Didn't get my invite.
Are you, Pastor Johnson, you get your invite?
Nah, mine got lost in the mail.
Yours got lost in the mail. Okay, I just want to make sure that I was the only one that didn't get an invite. Okay, all right, so he was in Philly, and he's getting some backlash. And he was in Philly at an event called Cognac and Cigars, right? And this was supposed to be an event to reach out for the Republican Party to reach out to African-Americans. And so he made this statement. He said, you see, during Jim Crow, black families were together. During Jim Crow, more black people were not just conservatives. Black people have always been conservative minded, but more black people voted conservatively. And then HEW and Lyndon Johnson, you go down that road and now we are where we are. I did hear his interview as well, and when he was there, and he made this statement that black families was more together in the Jim Crow era, but then when these government policies and programs got passed, it had an effect that's breaking up the black family, but now with a younger generation starting to emerge, you're starting to see more black families coming together. So what it comes across like he's alluding to, that in the Jim Crow era, black families were more together. Let me step back and Pastor Welch, I want to pass this ball to you first. What are your thoughts about Congressman Byron Donald's comments?
Well, first of all, I mean, we know that Jim Crow was a very difficult time, and pre-Jim Crow. In fact, all of history has been a difficult time for us. And right. So, you know, one, he's claims that he's the best communicator in the Republican Party. Certainly probably better than the one who he's hoping would tap him to be his running mate. But one, you can't say that blacks were generally conservative. We have always been, for the most part, have always been theologically conservative, but we've not been socially conservative.
Right.
And so he's really taking things and he's spinning it in a way, of course, in order to woo the black voters to support their agenda. And the Republican agenda. So, you know, I don't like spin masters, especially when you want to use our people and our history, most damaging time in our history, you know, for your benefit. If anything, you should have brought up the fact that, you know, the state of Oklahoma decided to dismiss the case, the Supreme Court dismissed the case that the Tulsa massacre. So if you want to use history well. You know, and don't misrepresent our folks, our ancestors, and what happened to our ancestors during those difficult times.
Wow. Pastor Johnson and Bishop Aiken, your thoughts?
Well, it's unfortunate that we have people who look like us from other parties trying to rewrite our own history in a sense that it will damage us, confuse us, and muddy the waters in an election year. Mm-hmm. So we have seen this before. The Republican Party uses people who are African American to kind of sway the vote and get people to vote their way. Anybody who knows the history of Jim Crow understands that Jim Crow was not a help to us. It was one of the most diabolical things that they could do to us. Mm-hmm. For him to say that the black family were more together. It may be a true statement because we were fighting for our very lives during Jim Crow, and we had to be together because there was an urgency, if you will, around our own survival. Mm-hmm. But to somehow equate that we did better under Jim Crow or somehow Jim Crow benefited us is a fallacy. And I think that he's just doing that to throw a red herring in order to get folks to say, hey, look, you can be so conservative because if it worked for us before, it'll work for us today. And I got news for you. If we're not careful, we may be dealing with the new Jim Crow right here in America.
Wow. Bishop Dr. Aiken, your thoughts, man.
Yeah, I agree with my brother. It's a subjective truth. I mean, it's you know, looking at the historical events that had transpired, the struggles that we've gone through, African Americans, the black families that have gone through, even when it comes to Jim Crow in that area and the times, there's always going to be a struggle, or a problem, or an issue. Mm-hmm. But we're dealing with it is we're dealing with time. The times of Jim Crow, the times that we're dealing with now, racism is still going to be racism. You're still going to have issues that the black families go through. And there's a way that all of us, in a sense, come band together to become stronger in a sense. So subjective truth says, hey, you know, they were stronger then. They're stronger now. That, of course, is not the truth. You know, when it comes to that, I mean, I think we find a way to fight the fight, regardless of what time it is, from Jim Crow up to this present age, we're still dealing with the same stuff. Right. And guess what? We're still fighting.
Mm-hmm. It's, you know, so there's a multiplicity of thoughts that come to my mind when I heard his comments. You got me. First, I ignored it. And then I was like, you know, we really need to talk about this and. You know, we really need to talk about this. So when I think about his comments, which is crazy, There's other words that I could use that could be taken out of context or put in proper context, to be exact. I think about when I heard the story about when my grandfather passed away. That's Robert Weathers, I believe that was. I think he was either Robert Weathers Jr., to be exact. I never met my grandfather. He died when my dad and his siblings were children. And so my grandmother, this is during Jim Crow South in South Carolina, went to get Social Security for the kids that my grandmother had. Now, my grandfather, you know, he was a sharecropper. You know, he was a worker. You got me, never relied on any system, had a car, had a mule. And I was told that was big back then in the 40s and 50s for you to be an African-American, to be a farmer. You got a car and a mule. That was big. That was just like blue collar black middle class. And so my grandmother went to get Social Security for, she had seven kids, right? And she had one on the way. And this is the Jim Crow era that this congressman is talking about. And so when my grandmother, God bless her soul, Ammonia Wade, went to get, you know, Social Security for the seven children and the one on the way, they would only give her Social Security for five and not the three. And when my grandmother inquired, well, let them know, listen, I have seven children, one on the way. You're only giving me Social Security for five. What about the three? And in the Jim Crow South, they told my grandmother, let them starve. Let them starve. You got me? So there's some adjectives, PG rated adjectives, that is, but I have to remain pastoral. And I say PG and G rated adjectives. I'm not going to go into R and X adjectives that I could give this individual here. How dare you say black families were more together in Jim Crow? Like, you're creating this vision that Jim Crow was great for us. It wasn't great for us. What are the statistics of the lynchings that took place, the discrimination and all that other stuff that happened under Jim Crow? And you got the audacity as an African-American to sit up here and say that families were more together under Jim Crow because you have your own political agenda. You're selling out your own people just for your own political gain. Let's call it for what it is. What's your thoughts about this emergence of people who really want to aspire to get to a higher office would rather sell their own people out just to get to another level of success? What's your thoughts about that, Pastor Welch, Bishop Aiken, and then Pastor Johnson? And we're going to 30-second station brief.
Well, I mean, you know, it's one, you know, there's an ethical violation. You don't use people for your personal gain. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't use them as a means to your end. And so, although, you know, there's no such thing as ethics within Congress, let alone the Supreme Court, you know, you can understand his faux pas, but you know, I just think it's unfortunate, for one. I understand where he's from. He's from Florida.
Actually, right? He grew up in Brooklyn.
Oh yeah, but I mean, he's representing Florida.
Gotcha.
So, right, he's representing Florida. Who else is in Florida? Ron DeSantis. Mm-hmm. Wasn't it Ron DeSantis who made a similar claim about how blacks benefited,
gained a skill?
Yeah, right. You know, so, you know, in his way of sort of promoting his little educational agenda. So, you know, it's and like, you know, Pastor Johnson said, it's unfortunate we have people who look like you, you know, but really are going to do whatever they can to sell you out, you know, in order for them to advance, you know. So there was a theologian, D.G. Bonhoeffer, said the sins of respectable people are revealed in their flight from responsibility.
Hmm.
So if you're irresponsible, that is one of the greatest sins you can have. Mm-hmm. This personal irresponsibility. And then when you're going to disadvantage your own folks, your own people, or disadvantage anybody, you know, for personal gain, you know, theologically, that is sinful. And what you need to do is repent.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I can't stand with it.
Wow.
Yeah. When I reviewed and looked at it and pretty much kind of read the things that were highlighted kind of in the headlining in the news or what have you, the only word that I actually could summarize it is selling out.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes when we look at the subject of even the definitive issue of that word sell out, what that is, I think the representation of and definition of that particular word is selling out. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a travesty where we are right now. And we do need a coming together. However, not from the standpoint of what he's referring to.
Pastor Robert Johnson.
Well, I think that Dr. Welsh said it best. He's from Florida, and everything that Florida has been doing to rewrite, erase, and take away our history. This goes down the road of trying to get America to think that what was done to us wasn't that bad.
That's right.
And I think that the other thing that we have to look at is that this is someone who also, I was reading an article last night, who is one of the up and comers in the Republican Party. And so he's positioning himself, even now, he's positioning himself to be one of those people who will probably make a run for a higher office, someone who will try to do some other things. But I'm going to be honest with you right here and now. We need to understand that, again, if we allow folk to rewrite our own history, then we have no one to blame but ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is where we need to push back, and push back in such a way where we don't come off angry, but we come off intelligent, we come off well-informed, and we come in a way that pulls people together to say, we're not going to blame you for what happened back then, but we sure are going to hold you accountable for the ramifications that are happening now.
And with that said, let's go on a 30-second station break on Conversation Unplugged on WWDB 860 AM in the city of brotherly love and sisterly affection. Let's go on a 30-second station break at this time.
Hi, this is Reverend Dr. Wayne M. Weathers. Not only am I the radio show host of Conversation Unplugged, but I'm also a life coach with BFG LLC. BFG means Bound for Greatness. As a life coach, what I do is I coach people to the goals and objectives that they would like to obtain. Whether you're a business entrepreneur, whether you're just trying to figure out certain things in life, utilize my services. Give me a call, 484-324-8397. Let's have a consultation so I can be your life coach so that you can achieve greatness that you're bound to get. Take care.
Welcome back to Conversation Unplugged on WWDB 860 AM in the city of brotherly love and sisterly affection. I want to take just another 30 seconds right now, turn the mic over to Bishop Dr. Kevin Akin, who took on a business initiative in Philadelphia. So we want to give you an opportunity to promote the best barbecue in the city of Philadelphia. So Bishop Akin, I'm going to turn this mic over to you, and we're going to get back on this subject. Tell us about your new business venture.
Yes, a couple of weeks ago, we opened up on June the 1st, 52nd and Locust Street Barbecue. If you're looking for brisket, if you're looking for pork ribs, beef ribs, if you're looking for pulled pork, we even put in fish and chicken and fries and all the other good stuff. And then, of course, on the sides, we have macaroni and cheese with collard greens. We also have candy yams, baked beans. What else am I missing? Cabbage, and the likes. And so I know I just made everybody hungry. So run down to 52nd and Locust Street Barbecue and make sure you let them know that the bishop has sent you. So you want to get a discount.
So, and I just want to tell my listeners out there, go down there and run, but don't turn off Conversation Unplugged. When you go down and run, just keep it on the radio. You got me? Don't turn this off. Don't turn this off. Well, good. Congratulations on stepping out on faith on your new business venture and initiative. And we definitely want to promote that every time.
Want
to promote that every time we take station breaks, as well as give you the opportunity to promote it here on Conversation Unplugged. All right.
Almost definitely. Yes. Thank you.
Let me just say congratulations, Dr. Kevin Akin.
Thank you.
Y'all, in the words of Agrippa, you almost persuaded me to become a Philadelphian. Almost.
We'll keep working.
That's right. Yes, sir. Thank you, man. Thank you.
Yeah, Yahoo.com has a news article as African-American that wanted to fact check Congressman Brian Donald's comments about the Black family staying together in the Jim Crow era. I'm not going to read all of it, but he says the following. Were Black voters more conservative? He states, most Black people don't vote under Jim Crow. According to the United States Census data between 1880 and 1960, the majority of Black Americans lived in the South. Specifically, they lived in states that, listen to this, disenfranchised African-American voters, which is why the Civil Rights Act of 1964 pre-clearance requirement banned these states from changing their voting laws without permission from the Department of Justice. It is literally impossible to know what the majority of Black Americans wanted under Jim Crow if they vote, if they could not vote. Even if one counted the votes of the Black people who did vote, there was never a moment in history of this country when the majority of Black voters supported conservative politics. Shortly after the Civil War, Southern Republicans started the anti-Black Lily White movement to prevent Black voters from gaining control of the party. Meanwhile, conservative Democrats didn't even allow Black people to attend the party's convention in an official capacity until 1924. Although a majority of Black voters supported Franklin Roosevelt's presidential campaign, it wasn't until 1948 that most Black voters, 77%, considered themselves Democrat. By then, white voters had fled, check this out, white voters had fled the Democratic Party precisely because the party was no longer conservative. Going just to say, so when Donald said Black people voted more conservatively during Jim Crow, Donald, that is, the not Donald Trump, but Congressman Brian Donald. So when Donald said Black people voted more conservatively during Jim Crow, either he was lying or he did not know what he was talking about. Your thoughts, Bishop Aiken, Pastor Johnson, and then Pastor Welch. I think you're on mute. Your mic is on. You got to turn your mic on, Bishop.
Yes. The only thing I could say, you know, at this point, when you're thinking about and listening to the discussion, very careful to listen to ignorance. Mm. Summarizing it, you know, when you're really listening and trying to get some understanding, be very careful of what you're listening to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. Pastor Johnson.
I think also that what we have to look at too is that Jim Crow did affect more of Southern states than it did Northern states.
Mm-hmm.
And the mere fact that the voting in the North, the Northern voting African Americans, if I am correct, they did vote more Republican.
Mm-hmm.
But in the Southern states, the disenfranchisement meant that, we don't have a good calculation on who voted and how they voted if they were able to vote. Mm-hmm. And what he did was that was really, really unique to me is he stated his point and his premise like Jim Crow was universal in all of America. This is all American, African Americans. These are all Blacks. These are all families. Mm-hmm. And we have to look at the disenfranchisement as it was doing North and South and even some places. Here in the North, we have some disenfranchisement. Let's be clear.
Yes.
But we have to make sure that people understand that the lynchings, the violence, the stuff that went on in the South was a direct correlation to, if you will, the fact that we still didn't have Juneteenth until 2 years later. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we have to make sure that folk understand that we're not talking about the whole area of America. But he is talking about the brutality and dehumanization of African Americans in the South.
Yeah, Pastor Welch, your thoughts?
I agree with what Pastor Johnson said. You know that when you look at the benefits of Jim Crow, the beneficiaries were whites in the South, and it was a protectionist strategy and mentality, much like what we still see today. White mm-hmm. folks want to protect what they think is theirs. And when you have a Black person that's singing the narrative or singing out of the hymn book of the white progress, a white protectionist for promoting patriotism, you know, you just have to be careful. I think what the person said who fact checked those remarks, of course, were spot on. Understand during that time period, who were disenfranchised when it came to vote. So why would you use a time in history when we were disenfranchised from voting in order to promote voting and voting for your particular agenda? It's a complete miss. It makes absolutely no doggone sense whatsoever. And I'm not cussing, Pastor. I said no doggone sense. I could have said something else, but I won't.
You just said something, Pastor Welch. I just wanted to add, I forget the person's name that I pulled this article. He did a tremendous job fact-checking. You talked about wealth. Did Black families fare better? First, let's look at wealth. He says in the 1900s, white households had about 9 times the wealth of Black households. This disparity in wealth essentially remained unchanged throughout the Jim Crow, according to the Wealth of Two Nations, the United States Race Wealth, the United States Racial Wealth Gap, 1860 to 2020. In 2022, the average family, white family, had $100 for every $15 held by Black households. And while the Black-white employment gap began during the Great Depression, which coincided with Jim Crow, this still doesn't tell the complete story. Listen to what the researcher said. He said, under Jim Crow, tax dollars from Black families were used to fund segregated education systems that increased the generation wealth of white families. Take Jim Crow, South Carolina, for instance, where Black citizens made up 48.9% of the population in 1940 because the state constitution made integrated schools illegal. Black K through 12 schools were worth an estimated $12.9 million, while white schools were worth nearly 5 times that number. The author goes on to say, who did the research, Jim Crow legalized theft wasn't limited to education. Under Jim Crow, Black families were forced to foot the bills for libraries, hospitals, parks, and public facilities they could not use. Their federal tax dollars funded scholarships and home loans for white veterans, while Black veterans were excluded from the GI Bill. The New Deal programs used Black taxpayers' money to give white people jobs, build redlined neighborhoods, and create white-only suburbs. Maybe Byron McDonald believes robbing Black families of their generational wealth and opportunity and giving it to white families is good for African Americans.
Ha. Huh. Yeah. You know, the to that point, The book called Slavery by Another Name, which kind of speaks to that, mm-hmm. how the Northern industrialists benefited from folks who were incarcerated in the coal mines down in Birmingham, Alabama, and other places in order to promote the steel industry. And so folks would be walking the streets and you know, violating the Black codes, which was all part of the Jim Crow period. You violated the Black codes, you could find yourself in jail. You leave your house in the morning. Your family don't see you for the rest of your life because you've gone through the system. You've been arrested. You've been put in a doggone mine for the rest of your life to die in order to benefit the industrialists of the North. And so, you know, we have contributed towards the wealth of white folks in this nation unfairly, you know. And so that's why it's not off the table to bring a reparations a conversation to fore, mm-hmm. you know. So, I don't get me started. Sorry.
Hey, Pastor Johnson, your thoughts, man.
One of the things I think that we need to look at, too, is the fact that in the midst of Jim Crow era, in the midst of what we're talking about today, and it is ironic that we are dealing with voting rights. It's ironic that we're dealing with Jim Crow. It's ironic that we're dealing with a plethora of things that we're dealing with in this particular moment in time. Because of the mere fact that we are in a unique position where the African American vote is tenuous right now for the Democratic Party because they think we're going to vote Democrat. We really have the lesser of two evils dealing with Joe Biden and Donald Trump. And what we have is we have a tendency to understand that when you confuse people and their history, their voting history, their very existence, you can kind of usurp, divide, and conquer in order to get folk to vote in such a way in an election year, right. An important election year, to get folk to understand that, if we can confuse them enough, we can get some of their votes. And if we can get their votes, then we can get back in the White House. Mm-hmm. And then we can get our agenda passed. Won't benefit them, but will benefit the white elite.
And I'm going to ask our
producer. Yeah, I agree.
I'm going to ask our producer if we could check Robert Johnson's broadcast because this is the first time he's getting like a bunch of feedback. So I just wanted to say that to the producer. To Bishop Aiken, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, no, I agree with Dr. Johnson. I think when we look at where the state of America, where we are, and then we look at the divide that's happening in our administration. Then we look at, no, the deciding factors that happen when it comes to voting. And we understand the power of the Black vote. When you understand the power of the Black vote, and you understand exactly what's needed, we're in a place right now where that's where the fight is. And so you have Donald, who is very vocal in the state of Black people, so to speak. And then you know exactly all of the different divide that has happened over time. It is taking advantage of the state of where we are and then trying to get the Black voters. And then you hear, of course, the absurdity of some of what was mentioned that Byron Donalds mentioned, of course, in his discussion about, you know, where we are and where we came from and what have you, and what state of being that we're experiencing even now versus before. You know, it's a travesty in a sense to know that you're taking advantage of the time and an advantage, of course, the black votes.
Yeah. Wow. So let's do this. Go on a 30-second station break conversation unplug on WWDB 860 AM as we're unplugging Congressman Byron Donalds' Jim Crow controversial statement. 30-second station break. We'll come back from Conversation Unplugged.
Hi, this is Reverend Dr. Wayne M. Weathers. Not only am I the radio show host of Conversation Unplugged, but I'm also a life coach with BFG LLC. BFG means Bound for Greatness. As a life coach, what I do is I coach people to the goals and objectives that they would like to obtain. Whether you're a business entrepreneur, whether you're just trying to figure out certain things in life, utilize my services. Give me a call, 484-324-8397. Let's have a consultation so I can be your life coach so that you can achieve greatness that you're bound to get. Take care.
We're back on Conversation Unplugged on WWDB 860 AM in the city of brotherly love and sisterly affection. My name is Reverend Dr. Wayne M. Weathers. I am the host of Conversation Unplugged with co-host Bishop Dr. Akin and Pastor Robert Johnson, with our guest, Reverend Dr. John Welch from Pittsburgh. As the research that's been done, this author in the Yahoo.com article says the following. He says the biggest problem with Byron's status as the Black Bull Connor is that everything he believes is based on a commonly accepted myth. For more than 200 years, both parties have managed to bamboozle their constituents into believing the false premise of political conservatism. Whether Donald is a shameless liar, a well-meaning ignoramus, or a political prop intentionally misinterpreting history, facts, and data of his own political gain, one thing is abundantly clear. There is no such thing as conservative principles. Before Strom Thurmond led an exodus of conservative white Dixiecrats to the GOP, the state rights, Democrats were considered the conservative party. Today, the Republican coalition consists of evangelical Christians, anti-abortion, pro-lifers, small government proponents, and ideologues who want to preserve their Judeo-Christian beliefs of gender, sexuality, and individual freedom. Conservatism is just white supremacy wrapped in American flag. Wow. That was some great research this person did in regards to his article and everything. There was many response. Vice President Kamala Harris, my sorority sister, your sister, Pastor Robert Johnson, Harris, in an interview published Monday, criticized a suggestion that last week by Republican Rep. Byron Donalds that Black families were together during the Jim Crow era. It goes on to say that the vice president called up the outlet to weigh in on the former President Donald Trump's announcement that he'll pick a running mate, et cetera, et cetera. Vice President Harris said the following. She said, "It's sadly yet another example of somebody out of Florida trying to erase or rewrite our true history." She goes on to say that referring to the state's intervention under Republican Governor Ron DeSantis into Black history curriculum, "I went to Florida last July to call out what they were trying to do to replace our history with lies. And apparently there's a never-ending flow of that coming out of that state." Donald's comments, which comes on Trump's campaign, seeks to make inroads with non-white voters, were made at an event in Philadelphia with Texas Rep. Wesley Hunt, another Black Republican supporter of the former president. You see, during Jim Crow, the black family was together, Donald said at the event last week, reported by the Philadelphia Inquirer. During Jim Crow, more black people were not just conservative. Black people have always been conservative minded, but more black people voted conservatively, he said. The backlash is coming out. Joy Reid countered him, interviewed him. Al Sharpton, he got upset with Al Sharpton. I saw Reverend Al Sharpton's interview. He really hammered him. And now he's trying to play victim blaming at this point, trying to say this is the Democrats coming down to criticize him, et cetera. What is your thoughts about the backlash that's coming out? Should there be more? Should there be less? Is it effective? Is it not effective? What's your thoughts, Pastor Welch, then Pastor Bishop Bacon and Pastor Johnson?
I think silence is a sign of complicity. So I applaud the backlash for sure. But I will also say that, you know, there should have been some backlash to the backlash that the 1619 report received. The backlash that guy came out in the 1776 report. And there was no backlash. There was no comment on that from us. So, you know, these little small responses to idiotic statements like, you know, that came from Byron, from that congressman, that's fine. And I think we should speak out. But the last word that came out against the true history of our country was the 1776 report that, you know, the former president kind of advised. And so determining, you know, what were the founding principles of this country. And so that's been the last word. So I'm more ashamed of the fact that we've not said anything more unilaterally as a people. These so-called talk show hosts and leaders did not come up and say anything against the 1776 report. So I'm glad that Joy and them said something about, you know, this congressman, but there should have been more said way before now.
Yeah, I totally agree with my brother in reference to the backlash. I think what should have been and what still should be is a feeling of freedom and feeling of justice. Mm-hmm. You know, when we look at where we have been and where we're going, we know that we're in a fight. Mm-hmm. I do agree that, you know, to be quiet and to not say anything gives consent. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that we should be outraged and there should be some conversations that are had. I think amongst the conversations that are had now, there should be a whole lot more. I think what we're doing in Conversation Unplugged should be exactly that. There should be conversations that we're unplugging about, you know, where our voices are. And again, throughout history, one of the main reasons why things where we are right now and how we have been be able to progress is because we did not stay silent. Mm-hmm. The idea of speaking out gives us a sense of one well-being, a sense of urgency needs to be spoken of. And we just, you know, for those that are speaking, great. And for those that are not speaking, I want to encourage you to speak up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your thoughts, Pastor Jones.
I think that speaking up is great. I think that mobilization is better. I think that we can let the talking heads on CNN and whoever else they want to speak up. But if there's ever going to be real change, if there's ever going to be a backlash, the backlash should be voter registration. The backlash should be one, voter registration. Two, it needs to be an education of the electorate, understanding why we're voting, who we're voting for, and what is the case, not just for president, but locally as well. And understanding that the real backlash doesn't come from the pundits on the TV, but it comes from those who walk the streets and do the ballot box. And that's the thing that's going to make the difference if we're going to be have what Bishop Aiken said, if we're going to have a freedom and equality and all those good virtues we want to have. It starts with us mobilizing after the conversation. Mm-hmm. Having the conversation and going home doesn't help us, but having the conversation and mobilizing right in small ways will help us to understand, to tell this congressman, hey, you ain't seen nothing. We're going to take what you didn't give us in Jim Crow,
right,
and use it right now for our own destiny and for our own own self-determination. So that's what I think. I love conversation, but I love mobilization better.
Yeah, it's this is very interesting, and I love this. Conversation is great, but mobilization is better. And I quoted that and put that on our Facebook page and everything as a direct quote. Thank you, Pastor Johnson. I find myself like wondering, like, how do we get into this malaise of complicity, to not complicity, being complacent? You know, when crazy comments like these were made, what was the dude's name, the senator? I forget his name. He made this comment in the 90s about if Strom Thurmond was president, things would have been better or something like that. And it was like the segregationalness. If the segregationist became president, then things would have been better. And the backlash was so vitriol that he had to resign from the Senate. You got me? And so, or, you know, how civil rights movement was so powerful at one point that you could not get the conservatives on the Supreme Court that are able to pass through very easily today compared to yesterday. Bork did not make it, you know, on the Supreme Court because of the vitriol and the backlash. But now you get these idiotic comments and from our own people, you know, disintegrate from the inside out instead of the instead of from the outside in. And you got a generation right now that has either not been taught their history or choose not to learn their history and find themselves falling into an ideology of folks that don't care anything about them. They will use them and wash them up real quick. And if dude fell on a sword today or tomorrow, they wouldn't pull him off the sword. He would be the sacrificial lamb. And so how do we get to this point where we either are silent, we're complicit, or we have a generation that is causing this, the history of the civil rights movement, to be erased from their for their personal gain? And let's get real. Donald would not be in the position that he's in if it wasn't for Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. And if it wasn't for all of the other civil rights leaders that broke down barriers for him to be where he is today, yet the same barriers that was broken down for his elevation is the same one that's trying to burn the bridge of our history. What's your thoughts about that before we go on our station break?
You know, let me say something that might be controversial here. Mm-hmm. One is there is no power in the Black vote. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I say there's no power in the Black vote is because power is the ability to affect change. And if you can't affect change, you have no power. What made Dr. King successful was and the ability to create the Civil Rights Act and Voting Rights Act was the power that he had in the mobilizing that included the Black vote. Mm. Now, the Black vote was divided back then, too, because he didn't have everybody on board with him. So let's not use this misnomer about the power of the Black vote. Because white folks understand that they're divided. And so they need the sliver of Black folks in order to get them over the top. That's not power. That's just using us in order to get them in the office. Mm-hmm. Our power is an ability, because if we had power in our vote, we would have sustained change. We would be going through the same mess we've been going through over the last few decades. So let's just be real clear about this. We've got to mobilize, like Dr. Johnson said. Power is an ability to mobilize. And when you mobilize, then you can affect change. But until we get there, it's not talking about the power of the Black vote, because it doesn't exist. That's my controversial point.
Yeah, you know, even with your controversial point, I'm going to add something to that. I think that's a good assessment of looking at where we are and defining and giving us the definition of power. I think that's important for our listeners to actually hear. But the one thing that I also want to add to that is we all know in coming together and unified in a unified front also is the beginning of the mobilization, or is the beginning of us coming together for unity. We have to recognize too that we are divided, and then to bring a biblical principle in this, that a house divided against itself cannot stand. And what that does is that what annihilates and disintegrates the power or the structure of mobilization.
Wow. So let's do this. Let's go. I'm going to follow up on it. Let's go on our last 30-second station break on Conversation Unplugged on WWDB 860 AM in the city of brotherly love and sisterly affection. Let's go on our last station break.
Hi, this is Reverend Dr. Wayne M. Weathers. Not only am I the radio show host of Conversation Unplugged, but I'm also a life coach with BFG LLC. BFG means Bound for Greatness. As a life coach, what I do is I coach people to the goals and objectives that they would like to obtain. Whether you're a business entrepreneur, whether you're just trying to figure out certain things in life, utilize my services. Give me a call, 484-324-8397. Let's have a consultation so I can be your life coach so that you can achieve greatness that you're bound to get. Take care.
Here, we're back on Conversation Unplugged on WWDB 860 AM in the city of brotherly love and sisterly affection. Before we go any further, Pastor Robert Johnson, you got a podcast you do once a week. Is that correct?
Yes.
Go ahead and announce it. 30 seconds, announce your podcast.
Not yet.
Okay. So it's coming. So let's just say get ready to watch.
I have seven podcasts ready to go. We're just waiting for it to be launched into cyberspace, Spotify, and all that stuff.
Well, good. Well, when you're ready to announce, yeah, let's rock and roll with it. Amen. So let me say, Pastor Welch wasn't telling folks not to vote. What he was saying to me, correct me if I'm wrong, what you're saying is that the power is in mobilization and we have to mobilize for our votes to be effective. I will also add to that, not just mobilization alone when we vote, but holding folks accountable. And that's what caused the civil rights movement to be effective. That once certain ones got in office, like Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King held Kennedy's administration accountable. He held Johnson's administration accountable to civil rights and Voting Rights Act. And every time they said, this is not the time, they always went back and says, no, this is the time. And so what's happening here is that we're voting people in office. And once we get them in office and we walk away, we don't hold them accountable. And then all of a sudden we get mad. I'm voting for Trump because Biden didn't do this, or I'm voting for Biden because Trump didn't do that, et cetera, et cetera. The problem is that we drop the vote in the ballot and we walk away and we like, okay, now do what you're going to do. No, you got to hold them accountable. You got to mobilize to get out the vote. You got to mobilize so they will vote. And then you got to mobilize to make sure with whom you voted in office that they're the ones that's going to carry out what it is that they said that they were going to do. Case in point, and then I'm going to turn it over to the guest and the co-host because we have about five to seven minutes left. I'm not a Trump fan. I'm going to tell you straight up. I'm not. But I always observe everyone. What are the strengths and what are the weaknesses? What can you learn? Trump took basically Obama's playbook and took it to a 4K among his constituents. But the one thing about Trump that he does that keeps his base pumped up is he's true to him, right? He's true to him. When he said he's going to do something, he's going to do it. Rather, it's going to benefit them the next 10 years from now. And my concern with MAGA Trump supporters is I see MAGA Trump supporters as African-Americans who supported Bill Clinton. And we called him the first black president. And then we started looking at policies 15, 20 years later and realized the policies wasn't for us. It was against us. So we thought he was one of us, but his policy says something totally different. I'm concerned that's what Trump voters are going to find out 15, 20 years from now. But all that said, the one thing I would say, he is true to his base. And that's what we have to be true to his base. And the reason why his base is true to him, because his base is holding them accountable. That if you don't do what we say, we're going to vote you out of office. That's why he has that support. And he feeds into the crazy ideologies that pumps them up to come out to the polls. Y'all thoughts about this as we close out?
Did anybody hear Donald Trump say just a couple of days ago, I don't really care about you. All I want is your vote. And then we see the amount of people who walked out that route because he told the truth. Have we seen the unhinged nature and the way that he's sabotaging his own campaign because he really doesn't want to do this anymore? And I think that the problem is what mobilization is. We mobilize every 4 years around a presidency when we're allowing lawyers, judges, and local bureaucracies to take us through the ringer. Mobilization starts at a grassroots level to affect the change of our local municipalities. Those who elect judges, those who elect those local elections, and that affects the change for us everyday lives. Mm-hmm. And I think that what we overlook and what we don't do is we don't understand that we have mobilized on the national scale, but we have cut the legs from us on our local elections.
Mm-hmm.
That's where mobilization brings power. That's where voting brings power, because it tells the mayors, the city councilmen, the fire chief or whoever, we're holding you accountable for our everyday living. You change every 4 years, President, but we want to have a quality of life right now. And that's where mobilization and those who have predominantly African-American constituencies bring power.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Johnson. And thank you, Dr. Weathers. Yeah, I'm not trying to tell people not to vote. Mm-hmm. That would be blasphemous. So, but we should be holding ourselves accountable. Because the core piece of mobilization that happens every week is in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we need to be making sure you're talking about a house divided can't stand. We're about as divided as you can get. Mm-hmm. Try to get a bunch of black clergy to agree on something. And I'm just being straight up, because too many of us are looking out for our own self-interest. And not for the self-interest of the community. And so, you know, we've got to mobilize ourselves and then mobilize our base, which are those folks that are sitting in our pews or virtual, unfortunately, as well. And so let's look at home. We got to get things right at home first. And that's with us as clergy. And then the rest of the mobilization can take place for local politics. Because politics has always been local.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been local. And so when we can affect change on a local level, then we can also affect gerrymandering.
Mm-hmm.
So that way we can control the state Supreme Court, you know, and make sure that this crazy stuff doesn't happen that's affecting our votes, you know, the foundations of our ability to vote. Mm-hmm. So, let's hold ourselves accountable.
Wow.
As black preachers, pastors.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Dr. Welsh brought up some really sobering things when it comes to the idea of bringing black preachers together and trying to agree in a sense on one thing and coming together. The one thing I wanted to bring up far as point reference is this idea of mobility, as Dr. Robert Johnson was talking about and kind of mentioning. There are two areas that we really need to focus our attention on. One, of course, is social mobility. When you talk about human capital and the fact that we have to socialize a lot of these things at a local level, as Johnson was kind of speaking on, and in our houses of faith, when we also have to agree to come together with that far as social mobility. Then from there, in our energy of coming together, as we're socializing, we move into the area of economic mobility, where you have the authority and you have the funds and you have the finances. As we're coming together, as we socialize one another, we're putting our funds together and we're making some things happen and making some things move because we have the capital to do it. And so, again, I'm just distinguishing the idea of mobility from the areas of these two factors, one being social mobility, the other being economic mobility. And then we start moving into the area for is this workforce development and other areas in that sense. So I just wanted to kind of bring those things out because we kind of are bringing these terminologies up. And I think that is important that our listeners understand these two areas that is very important for our unity.
Wow. So, one thing I'll say as we get ready to close out, got 1 to 2 minutes left, is that what Byron Donald, Congressman Brian Donald, his statement was done out of mobilization. He's mobilizing conservatives, especially African-Americans, with a lie or a fallacy or a premise that is not true. But we see direct mobilization on the other side. And we have to get back to the point where we mobilize not on ideologies, but we mobilize on concrete issues, bread and butter issues. And it's interesting to see how one side can mobilize over a lie. The election was stolen. That's a mobilization lie. the criminal justice system is rigged. 34 count conviction, felony conviction. It's rigged. But yet Hunter Biden, he gets found guilty. 24, 48 hours ago, nobody said the system is rigged. You got me. So system must be fair because he got, you know, he got convicted as of doing a crime as well. That could be argumentative. What I'm getting at here is that as we move forward in the last 30 seconds, I'll close out by saying the following. We can't let somebody erase our history because we see it's happening. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about folks that want to denounce their identity, denounce their membership in the Divine Nine, Black college fraternities and sororities. That's, again, erasing history. Ron DeSantis sanctioning and censoring books and others. That's erasing history. And now you want to talk about, you want to erase it, and then you want to rewrite it because you're more concerned about the history itself that you want to lie to cover it up. And that's what's happening at this point. Well, thank you for joining Conversation Unplugged on WWDB 860 AM in the city of brotherly love and sisterly affection. Pastor Welch, we'll send you an Eagles hat and jersey for being on our show today. Amen. Amen. Amen.
Let's go. Throw some barbecue in there with it. All right.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. And make sure you get a barbecue platter with that one.
Yeah. So thank you for joining Conversation Unplugged. We're going to unplug right now. And then God bless us with breath in our bodies. We will have a rebroadcast next week. We'll be back live the week after next. All right. Take care. God bless. May heaven continue to smile upon you. Take care.